Thanks to the organizers for giving me the opportunity to speak at this great conference. And I also want to start by thanking my collaborators. So those are Hao Song, who was a student in Boulder, who's now a postdoc in Madrid. Shengji Huang, who's a current student in Boulder, who's here this week. And Liang Fu, who's also here. And thanks to the Department of Energy for the funding for this work. So, so I'm going to tell you about topological phases protected by point group symmetry. So that falls into the group of SPT phases. So we've heard various talks about SPT phases already, but let me just remind you what I mean by that. Let me give some definition. So these are zero temperature phases of matter that are characterized by one having an energy gap. There's some symmetry, which is not spontaneously broken. But if we explicitly break the symmetry, then the ground state becomes trivial, or we can adiabatically connect it to a trivial ground state. So these properties imply that in the bulk of the system, there's no intrinsic topological order. So there are no excitations with non-trivial braiding statistics, and there's no ground state degeneracy on the torus. Okay, so here are some classic examples. I think they're probably familiar to probably pretty much everyone here. So the Haldane spin chain in one dimension and two and three dimensional topological band insulators protected by charge conservation and time reversal. Okay, so there are many different types of SPT phases we could try and study. So I want to focus on something. So what SPT phases do I want to study? So here's some guidance suggested by Ashwin. Thanks. you know, of course, what Socrates really meant when he said this is that most theory of SPT phases focuses on internal symmetries or on non-interacting fermions. You know, and there are many interesting examples there, and there's a lot of beautiful theory there. We've been hearing about some of it, but in solids, solids have crystal lattices usually, and there are discrete symmetries of the crystal lattice, including reflection, but not just reflection. They're pervasive in solids. They're important for many phenomena in solid state physics, and so we shouldn't ignore these symmetries when we study SPT phases. And in particular, okay, so that's one point, sort of the point of these symmetries are out there. We should think about them. Another point is just that this is an interesting theory problem. One thing I can say is that for crystalline SPT phases, so SPT phases protected by crystalline symmetries, where interactions are strong and play an important role, there are some examples and case studies. But I think it's fair to say that there's no general theory of such phases. And the reason that's true is that a lot of the tools and tricks that we know from thinking about internal symmetry don't seem to generalize to the case of crystalline symmetry in an obvious way. Okay. So in this talk, I'm going to focus on a particular class of crystalline SPT phases. Those protected by crystalline point group symmetry. So, of course, there's more to crystalline symmetry than just point groups, but that's what I'm going to focus on. So I'll call those point group SPT phases or PG-SPT phases. So our main result is kind of a surprise, which can be summarized in this kind of vague statement, which is that PG-SPT phases, point group SPT phases, are actually easier, theoretically, to understand than SPT phases protected by internal symmetry in the same spatial dimension. So this was definitely a surprise to me. I think it's probably not only surprising to me. I definitely, before we did this work, had a bias that this problem is actually harder than the problem of thinking about internal symmetry. But it turns out that it's not true. It's actually, we can map it onto a problem that turns out to be an easier problem to solve. And the reason this is true, which I'll explain, is there's a mapping between a point group SPT state in spatial dimension D and certain lower dimensional topological states with internal symmetry. Okay, so we go one dimension down and we turn point group symmetry into internal symmetry, and both those things make the problem easier to solve. Okay, so that observation is really the engine that drives drives our results. It lets us obtain a few different kinds of results. So one is that I'll be able to tell you how to classify and characterize an arbitrary point group SPT phase in terms of lower dimensional topological states with internal symmetry. And this is something that works in any spatial dimension. It works for bosonic or fermionic systems, and it works for any point group. For simplicity, I mostly will focus on reflection symmetry in this talk, but that's only for simplicity, and the approach is really more general. I will talk about something beyond reflection at the end. And something else that comes out of this is the following statement. So any point group SPT phase can be constructed as a stack or array of some lower dimensional topological phases with internal symmetry. Okay. So I'll explain that too. So I just want to make a remark because it's related to some things that have come up in earlier talks. So if we just think about reflection, reflection point group SPTs are related to time reversal SPTs if we assume a Lorentz invariant field theory description. And that's really because in Euclidean spacetime, these are really the same thing, actually. But I'm not going to make this assumption of a Lorentz invariant field theory description. And I'll comment more on this at the end. Okay. So I'll come back to that point. So before I really get started, I just want to mention that there has been some very nice work on point group SPT phases with interactions, in some cases with strong interactions, much of it done by people who are here in this room. And just a couple points that I want to make. So in one dimension, there's really a complete theory. There's only one point group. It's just inversion. And so there's an understanding there. Our results match onto that understanding. I won't talk about that in this talk, but if you're curious about that, you can ask me later. In higher dimensions, I think, what do I want to say? So I think there are numerous case studies and examples. There's definitely not a general theory, and I think it's fair to say that for strongly interacting point group SPT phases in three dimensions, there's really not that much understanding. Okay. Okay. So I want to start with what, by some criteria, is kind of the simplest interesting example. And that really illustrates all of the crucial ideas. Okay. And so let's go to three spatial dimensions. We'll consider a bosonic system where the only symmetry present is a mirror reflection symmetry. So maybe there are other symmetries, but we'll ignore them. And we're going to focus on a single mirror plane. And that's maybe worth a comment that, of course, in a real solid, you won't just have a single mirror plane. You'll have many of them, because the mirror reflection will be embedded in a larger space group. But you're always free to just focus on a single mirror plane, just ignore the rest of the symmetry. And that will actually turn out to be important. Okay, so you'll see that we, you'll see why that turns out to be important in a moment. Okay, so, and by mirror reflection, I really mean just reflect one of the space coordinates, which, let's say, we take x to minus x. So here's a picture of the system. This is a cross-section through the bulk. There's no surface yet. This dashed line is a cross-section of the mirror plane. Sigma is the mirror operation. And I just want to divide space into three regions. So there's a region R0, which is a slab centered around the mirror plane. And it goes into itself under the mirror reflection. Then on the left, there's a region R1 and the mirror image of region R1 on the right. Okay, we can always do that. We're just dividing up our space into three regions. And now let me make the claim, which I'll then give a couple of arguments for. So the claim is, if we have an SPT ground state protected by this reflection symmetry, this ground state is adiabatically connected, preserving symmetry, to a state which is a trivial product state in the left, a trivial product state in the right, and something non-trivial in the middle. But this is really a two-dimensional region, because the width of this region is something that we can take fixed in the thermodynamic limit. Okay, so this is really a two-dimensional slab. So this is the key statement. Okay, so why is this useful? As I said, there are really two reasons this is useful. One is that if we think about this two-dimensional region, What was a reflection symmetry in three dimensions actually is effectively an internal symmetry of this two-dimensional system. It's just effectively an Ising symmetry, okay? And also, so our three-dimensional point group SPT state is equivalent to some biadiabatic continuity. It's equivalent in that sense to some two-dimensional state on the mirror plane. And instead of a reflection symmetry, it now has a Z2 internal symmetry. Okay, and so this is definitely a simplification of the problem, and I'll explain how to use this to understand the classification of these states in a bit. First, I want to argue for this claim. I'll give a couple of different arguments. It's really the same argument, just said in two different ways. The first one slightly less detailed than the second. So the quick argument is the following. So you go into region R1. And you think about a patch of the system, this green patch, and we think about the Hamiltonian density in that patch. Okay, so we have an SPT phase, so that means that if we ignore symmetry, there's no obstruction to making the system completely trivial. And within this patch, there's no symmetry at all. There's no symmetry that takes this patch into itself. So if we just think about the properties of this patch, it's like we have a no-symmetry system in that patch, but we also have an SPT state. So there should be no obstruction to changing the Hamiltonian density here to make to basically make this patch locally trivial in some sense, as long as we do the corresponding thing over here. Okay, and as long as these patches are far enough away, they don't overlap, there should be no problem with that. So if we do that everywhere, this region certainly needs to have some finite width in order to do that. If we do that everywhere, that should basically correspond to this adiabatic continuity. Okay, we certainly can't do that in the middle near the mirror plane, because at some point we'll get patches that actually straddle the mirror plane, and then you can't do this anymore. Okay, so that's the kind of quick argument. There's a bit more detailed argument. It's really the same thing, though. We can say the following. So given that we have an SPT ground state to begin with, by definition, we know that if we explicitly break the symmetry, we can adiabatically connect that to a product state. And that can be done by a local unitary that I'll represent as a finite depth quantum circuit. Okay, and this equation and similar equations will be true, will become more and more true as we make the depth of the circuit larger. It's not literally true for a finite depth, but there are some exponentially small corrections to that. But let's not worry about those details. So there's some local unitary, some finite depth circuit that trivializes the SPT ground state. And in general, in order to do this, that local unitary will have to break the symmetry. Okay. So we can, however, we can start from this finite depth circuit, and we can use it to construct a symmetry-preserving circuit that will do the job of this adiabatic continuity for us. Okay, so how do we do that? So we take this thing, which is drawn in one dimension. We observe that we can cut it somewhere, just cut it somewhere in space, and just throw out some of the unitaries that we use to build it up. So we'll get a new quantum circuit which is supported, say, just on a half space. Okay, so if we put the cut, say, here, just to the right of where region R1 ends, okay, and then we act with that new cut circuit in this region, we should be able to make the state trivial in this region. Okay, and the intuition here, this is something that I don't have a proof of, but the intuition is that if you look at the action of this cut circuit some number of correlation lengths away from the cut, because the ground state you start with is short-range entangled, the action of this operator and the action of this operator should be indistinguishable on that state once you get a few correlation lengths away from the cut. Okay. Okay. So if we just act with a cut operator over here, that's not sufficient. That very badly breaks the reflection symmetry. But we can just copy the same thing on the other side by conjugating it with the reflection symmetry. Okay. And these two operators don't overlap, as long as this region is wide enough, and then we take the product of them, and we can use that to trivialize our state, except in this slab in the middle. Okay, and in order to do this, here you can see pretty explicitly that the width of this region needs to be much greater than any correlation length of the system. Okay, but the width can be kept fixed in the thermodynamic limit, but it does need to be parametrically larger than the correlation length. And as you make this larger, this statement will become more and more true also as you make the depth of the circuit larger. Okay, so that's why you can't include translation symmetry normal to the mirror plane, by the way, because if you did, then you'd be trying to do this in a region on the size of a lattice constant, and the correlation length in general will be a lot could be a lot larger than that. Okay, so it's important to just focus on the mirror reflection symmetry. Okay, so that's some so that's an argument for this claim of adiabatic continuity to a lower dimensional state. So how do we actually use this? So one thing we can do is we can turn this into a classification. So we can turn this observation into a classification of these bosonic mirror SPT phases. And it's helpful to think about that in two steps, so which we can phrase as two different questions. So the first question is, so we have now a two-dimensional system. We need to ask what kind of states can we put down on the mirror plane? So what two-dimensional quantum phases can occur on the mirror plane? Okay, so that's one question. And there's a second question. Naively, we might guess that the answer to the second question is sort of trivial, but it turns out not to be. The second question is how to group these two-dimensional states on the mirror plane into equivalence classes of three-dimensional quantum phases with the reflection symmetry. Okay, so there are a couple. There are interesting things that happen in both of these answering both of these questions. So let me tell you about that now. So so let's deal with the first question first. So what 2D phases can we put on the mirror plane? So the general answer to that question is that we can put down integer topological phases. Okay, these are or invertible topological orders. Okay, so these are states with a gap, which have no anyons, and they have to preserve the Z2 symmetry, which is now acting like an on-site symmetry. Okay, and there are really two distinct possibilities for this. Let me say that the reason that we can now make progress is that we know a lot with asterisks inserted at appropriate places. You could almost say that we know everything about such states with Z2 symmetry in two dimensions. Okay, you do need to insert some asterisks if you really want to make that statement, but I'm not going to worry about that. So there are two possibilities. So one possibility is that we can put a two-dimensional SPT state on the mirror plane. Okay, and there's one non-trivial such state. Okay, here's a, you can think of it, it's ground state wave function in a domain wall picture. So if you write it, if you write the wave function as a superposition of domain wall configurations, there are some phase factors which are minus one to the number of domain walls in each configuration. So this state has the property as a two-dimensional state. It has some gapless edge modes that are protected by the Z2 symmetry. In the present setting, you know, what can we do with this state? Or really the question we could ask is, okay, we can put this state on the mirror plane, but what three-dimensional state, you know, that's a very inhomogeneous kind of state if we think of it as a three-dimensional state. We just have this one thing sitting on the mirror plane and nothing anywhere else. So we really should be able to get this from a more homogeneous three-dimensional state, even if we ignore translation symmetry. And we can definitely do that because we can make a stack of these 2D states, right? So here's the mirror plane we're focusing on. We can have a stack of many of these planes. And then if we run our dimensional reduction argument on this stack, the states away from the plane will just become trivial because there's no symmetry there once we focus on this one mirror plane. And we'll be left with just this single state on the mirror plane. Okay, so so what this is kind of telling us is that this state, it's really a stack, or we can construct it as a stack. Okay, that's not the only possibility, actually. So we can also, the other possibility is that we can put down an E8 state or some integer number of copies of an E8 state on the mirror plane. So if you don't know what this is like a bosonic version of the integer quantum Hall state in the sense that it has a quantized thermal Hall effect. It has a chiral central charge of 8, which leads to a quantized thermal Hall conductance. But it has no fractional excitations in the bulk. It doesn't have any anions. And it's not an SPT phase as a two-dimensional system, because if we we might have some symmetry, but if we break that symmetry, we still have the chiral central charge. We're not going to get rid of that. Okay. So now it's actually less obvious here that it's okay to have the E8 state on the mirror plane, because it looks like, well, if I break this Z2 symmetry, I still have an E8 state on the mirror plane. I didn't really get rid of it. Why is that allowed? That looks like it's not an SPT state. So there are a couple things we can say about that. The first thing we can say is we can still make a stack construction, okay, and with a little bit more detail. Let's put back translation symmetry, okay? So here's our unit of translation, Tx. This is the mirror plane that eventually we're going to focus on, sigma. Now notice that when you have translation and a mirror symmetry normal to the translation, you actually get two inequivalent kinds of mirror planes, which are not related by conjugation in the symmetry group. Okay, so the blue planes are all related by conjugate. They're all translations of one another. But there are also, you could call them bond-centered planes, which are also perfectly good reflection planes, which are not translations of the blue ones. They're half a lattice constant away. So on the blue planes, we can put E8 states with chirality plus 1, chiral central charge of plus 8. On the red planes, we can put E8 states with the opposite chirality and make an alternating stack. If we break the reflection symmetry explicitly in this stack, it's obvious that we can pair these E8 states together and get a trivial state. Okay. However, if we run the dimensional reduction procedure on it, we compare these two, and we're left with a single E8 state on the mirror plane. Okay, so this is clearly allowed. The other thing we can say, well, why is this allowed? Is sort of a useful piece of intuition. In this dimensional reduction procedure, when you have something like an E8 state on the mirror plane, the real role of the reflection symmetry is to pin that E8 state to the mirror plane. If you break the reflection symmetry, it can start to move away. And at that point, there's kind of nothing special about it, and you might as well forget about it. That's what this example is kind of telling us. Okay. So those are the two possibilities for what we can put down on the mirror plane in this example. Okay, so that's only the answer to the first question. Okay, so we found a classification of 2D phases, which are invertible topological orders with Z2 symmetry that can live on the mirror plane. And that 2D classification is Z2 cross Z. So the Z2 factor comes from the Z2 SPT. The Z factor comes from the E8 states. We can take integer copies of them. And naively, this would just be the answer to the classification of three-dimensional phases that we're interested in. It turns out that that's not the case, and it collapses to a coarser classification. Okay, so why is that? We need to talk about what are the equivalence operations that group these states together into equivalence classes that are quantum phases. So the first two operations are just the equivalence operations we would have in two dimensions. So adiabatic continuity preserving symmetry and adding some trivial degrees of freedom, some kind of stable equivalence. So these will give us the Z2 cross Z classification. Okay, but there's a third operation that we need. So remember that when we do this dimensional reduction procedure, we have this region that I called R0 that had some width. Well, we could have made it wider. We could have made it twice as wide or four times as wide. And that means that we're including more degrees of freedom in it. And one way to represent that, if we want to stick with two-dimensional pictures, which we want to do to make life easy, we can represent that by adding on 2D layers on the two sides of this region. So we call this adjoining layers. And we need to do this in such a way that these two layers go into one another under the reflection symmetry. Okay. This is not the same as stable equivalence, just adding trivial degrees of freedom. It's similar, but it's not the same. The reason is that these layers that we add do not have to be trivial. And in fact, they can be E8 states. The only interesting thing they can be in this example is E8 states. Because this 2D layer is sort of like a no-symmetry 2D system with some integer topological phase. So basically, the only thing it could be is an E8 state. And in fact, if you go back to this picture, you know, what you see is that, well, we could have done dimensional reduction on a wider region here, including these three planes. We would have gotten a net E8 chirality of minus 1 instead of plus 1. And that corresponds to starting with this E8 state in the middle and adding on these two red layers. Okay, so that the fact that you need to be able to do this is already there in that picture. Okay, so once we consider this operation, this Z2 cross Z classification collapses, and the way to see that is the following. So let's look at a state. Let's start with a state on the mirror plane, which is two E8 states, two copies of the E8 state. So this is the N equals 2 state of the Z. And then we're going to adjoin two, and reflection acts trivially on this state. So then we adjoin two E8 layers. They go into one another under the reflection. And we get a non-chiral state with Z2 symmetry. And there are two possibilities for this state. It could be trivial, or it could be the non-trivial two-dimensional SPT state. Okay, it's not chiral in this setting. These are really the only two possibilities. And we can show that the possibility that's actually realized is this one. It's trivial. And you can show that by analyzing an edge of this system. Okay, so what that means is that the classification collapses to Z2 cross Z2. So this Z factor just turns into a Z2. It's interesting to note that if it had been the other possibility, the two-dimensional SPT state, we would have gotten a Z4 classification because the N equals 2 state of this Z would have become the root, the generator of this Z2. Okay, but that's not what actually happens here. Okay, so now, so that's a bosonic example. I want to tell you about what happens if you try to apply the same reasoning to electronic topological crystalline insulators with mirror symmetry. We did start like 3 minutes late.
We started 5 minutes late.
Oh, 5 minutes late. Oh, okay. So let me just give a one-slide review of some things that we know about electronic topological crystalline insulators, or TCIs, with mirror symmetry. So I want to think about electrons with both U1 charge conservation, so we can have an insulator and mirror reflection. And in this setting, we'll call topological phases, we'll call SPT phases topological crystalline insulators, or TCIs. And so it's known that for non-interacting electrons, there's an integer classification of such SPT phases. And the integer is just the mirror Chern number, which I'm not going to explain. And another point which is very much worth mentioning is that one such state was predicted to occur and then subsequently observed experimentally in this family of materials, lead, tin, telluride. So another result I want to mention, because it's really an important precursor for our whole approach, is some work by Isobe and Fu, who showed that this Z classification is reduced to Z8. And they did this by considering the surface theory, a surface theory of Dirac fermions. And they added spatially varying Dirac mass terms in such a way that reflection symmetry is preserved on certain lines to dimensionally reduce the surface theory to 1D lines, which are gapless at the non-interacting level, but they showed that the N equals 8 surface can be gapped using bosonization. So the Z is known to reduce to Z8. Okay. So, but I want to consider not just what happens to the Z classification upon adding interactions. I want to ask, are there any intrinsically strongly interacting TCIs? Or another way of asking that question is the Z8 complete? Okay, and it's not, and the full classification, or at least a more complete classification, is Z8 cross Z2, and this Z2 corresponds to an intrinsically strongly interacting electron TCI. So now I want to explain that result. First, as a warm-up, I just want to tell you how to get the Z in the non-interacting limit using this dimensional reduction approach. You can apply this to non-interacting fermions just as well. You ask the same two questions. First question is, what can go on the mirror plane? So you can put integer quantum Hall states where the fermion field has a reflection eigenvalue of 1, or you can put integer quantum Hall states where the reflection eigenvalue is -1. Okay, and this naively gives a Z cross Z classification. And actually, as 2D phases, that's really what you have. But this classification is too big because we can do this adjoining layers operation. Okay, and so this here adjoining layers, you can look at this example later, collapses the Z cross z to just a single integer classification, which we know is the right answer. Okay, so what about the interacting case? So first, let me tell you what the 2D classification is. So there are three kinds of states that we can put on the mirror plane. We can still put integer quantum Hall states, let's say with fermions with reflection eigenvalue 1. We can put E8 states, which I'll call E8 paramagnets. So the spin sector can be in an E8 state, but the fermions are not really doing anything interesting. Okay. And then the last thing we can do is we can have SPT phases, it's known that there's a Z4 classification of SPT phases in this case. These are really just, and the way that you get, so these are states are all obtained from free fermions. You take n integer quantum Hall layers with reflection eigenvalue plus 1, and then you take n nu equals minus 1 layers with the opposite reflection eigenvalue. Okay, there's an integer family of such states at the level of non-interacting electrons, but the n equals 4 state is trivial. So you get a Z4 classification of SPTs. Okay, so I don't want to explain this in detail, but we have to also answer the second question. So this 2D classification again collapses. Now it collapses to Z8 cross Z2. The integer classification of E8 states collapses to a Z2 just like before. It's exactly the same analysis. Actually, nothing changes. But this part of the classification, this Z cross Z4, actually collapses to Z8. Okay, and basically what happens is if you add two integer quantum Hall states together, that's the same. It turns out to be the same under adjoining layers as the root state of this Z4. Okay, so I want to say something about point groups beyond reflection symmetry, because I promised I would. The geometry starts to get more interesting. So, so let's go back to a bosonic system in three dimensions. But now let's consider C2V symmetry. So C2V symmetry is just a point group generated by two perpendicular mirror planes. Okay, and those are drawn here, sigma 1 and sigma 2. Okay, so in this case, we cannot dimensionally reduce onto just one of the planes, but what we can do is we can dimensionally reduce onto this cross-shaped region. Okay, right? The reason, the way that works is that basically you can trivialize this region, this quadrant, and then you can copy the local unitary that trivializes that region to the other four quadrants by applying the symmetry. So it's the same kind of argument as before, but now you get this cross-shaped region. And it's kind of useful to look at the cross-shaped region as a bunch of pieces. So this piece is a two-dimensional plane. It's part of it's really a two-dimensional half plane with an on-site Z2 symmetry, which is sigma 2. Okay, and of course, this half plane is related to this half plane by the sigma 1 symmetry, which actually acts as a reflection symmetry within that 2D plane. Okay, so actually here, you know, in some sense, we haven't completely reduced the symmetry to on-site symmetry, but if you look locally, we basically have. Okay, if you look at sort of local pieces of this cross. Now, there's also a middle part of the cross, right? You can think about this region, which is really a one-dimensional region. So that's like a one-dimensional system with a Z2 cross Z2 symmetry. Of course, this, as an abstract group, C2V is just the same as Z2 cross Z2. This region we can think of as having a Z2 cross Z2 on-site symmetry. Okay, so we can proceed the same way. We can try to put down different states in these regions. There are these different planes, and then there's this 1D region in the middle. And there are four different root states that we can put down that generate a Z2 to the fourth classification. So one thing we can do is we can put a Z2 SPT phase either on this plane. You can't do it just on this part because this part is related by reflection. So you can put it on this plane, or you can put it on this plane. Okay, those are two root states. Another thing you can do, if both the planes are trivial, you can put a one-dimensional Haldane phase protected by the Z2 cross Z2 symmetry on this 1D axis. Okay, and there's a last thing you can do. You can actually put E8 states on these planes with this sort of funny arrangement of chiralities. So this picture, what it actually means is if you just had E8 states on these planes and you cut the system and made a surface, these arrows would show you which way the chiral edge modes are moving. So you have modes coming in and coming out, and you can check that this is actually okay. You couldn't put the arrows all going in. That would cause some kind of catastrophe, would probably be inconsistent with energy conservation. But this is a possibility. Okay. So I just want to mention a couple of odds and ends and then give you a bit of an outlook. I'll try not to use up all the discussion time doing that. So you can use this approach to study surface properties, and we've done that, but I don't have time to tell you much about it. Basically, what this tells you, going back to this three-dimensional bosonic mirror SPT case, is that you should be able to study surface properties by first dimensionally reducing the bulk and then cutting to get a surface. And it suggests that you should try to think about this T-junction kind of geometry, where the bottom of the T is the mirror plane and the top is a 2D surface. Okay, and so indeed we can do that. We can show just that one concrete result. For these particular SPT phases, we can show that they all admit gapped topologically ordered surfaces, so non-invertible topological order on the surface, but where the symmetry, the reflection symmetry, is realized in an anomalous fashion. Okay, and a sort of general point, which is kind of interesting, I think, is that this is really telling us that there's some anomaly of this 2 plus 1 dimensional surface. And one way to cancel that is with a 3 plus 1 dimensional bulk, but we needn't cancel it that way. We can actually cancel the anomaly of this 2 plus 1 dimensional surface with a 2 plus 1 dimensional bulk. That's what this picture is really telling us, and so we've done that in some concrete examples. I'd also mention there's some recent work exploring this further by Ethan Lake, who's here, so you can ask from a different perspective, more from a field theory perspective, so you can ask Ethan about that if you're interested. So I promised I would comment on the relationship between reflection and time reversal. So there's a kind of curious correspondence, not really curious from a certain point of view, that if you look at some system with reflection symmetry, a corresponding system with time reversal symmetry instead, the classification of SPT phases you get is exactly the same. And if the system is fermionic, the action of the symmetry on fermions is different. So if you have reflection squaring to 1, that's related to time reversal squaring to fermion parity. So these time reversal classifications were all obtained by other people in previous works. Okay, and so they match, you know, this is not really unexpected, because if you assume a Lorentz invariant field theory description, these symmetries are really the same in Euclidean space-time. This is really just two different ways of looking at the same thing from that point of view. So, however, we haven't made this assumption, so you could look at this correspondence in a couple different ways. One thing you could look at it as a check that this assumption is okay. It's actually not obvious that this assumption is okay in general for point group SPT phases, and I could tell you at least one example where the assumption is okay, but in a very subtle way. So there's a question of whether you can really restore Lorentz invariance for these theories, and it's not always obvious how to do that. I don't know an example of a state like this that does not have a Lorentz invariant field theory description, but it's also not obvious that that doesn't exist. Another way you could look at this is if you want to make this assumption of a Lorentz invariant field theory description, you could look at the kind of arguments I showed you as actually a simpler way of obtaining these classifications for time reversal. So maybe I'm biased, but I think our arguments are simpler than many of the arguments over on this side. Okay, so that's another perspective on this. You know, there's also a question here, which is that if this is really, you know, we shouldn't need this assumption, and so there should be a reason, there should be an argument that these two columns are the same, if this is really correct, that does not rely on assuming a Lorentz invariant field theory description. There should be some way to see this more directly, although maybe not as easily. And that might be interesting. So just to summarize, so I argued that, you know, point group SPT phases can be classified and studied by this kind of dimensional reduction approach, and it follows from that that all point group SPT phases can be constructed as stacks and arrays. So I just want to mention very quickly some things that are left open. So one thing that this doesn't, so this is not a formal classification. It doesn't answer the question, what's the mathematical structure of point group SPT phases? There's no mathematical machine into which you put your point group and out comes an answer of the classification. So that's an open question, and it would be interesting to understand it. This approach does not apply to space group symmetry in general, and so that's definitely open. And another thing which is interesting is that it's possible to think in a very similar way about non-invertible topological orders with point group symmetry, where rather than reducing the system to, say, if you have reflection, a trivial state away from the mirror plane, you reduce it to some reference state, like, say, the toric code, but with no special properties. And so that is, in principle, that's an approach to study SET phases with point group symmetry, which has not been explored yet, and it might be interesting to try to do that. Thanks.
We have just a couple minutes for questions.
So Mike, I can ask my question first. So Mike,
yeah.
So is it clear how your classification will be changed or extended if you make this construction compatible with translation symmetry?
I think the short answer is no. So what we can do is we can put in translation symmetry to a certain extent. So for example, if you, I mean, it's helpful to have a picture to look at. So, you know, if we go back to this case of reflection symmetry, we can look at stacks like this. What you can do, so this is some alternating stack of E8 states which respects both the translation and reflection symmetries. You can also think about putting down Z2 SPTs in the same kind of arrangement. So you can put them down either on the blue planes or on the red planes. Those are two independent reflection subgroups. And so from that, you actually get a Z2 cubed classification with reflection plus translation. However, we do not know if that classification may not be complete, because that's the classification you get by taking the space group that corresponds to this arrangement and then looking at independent reflection subgroups. But there could be interplay between reflection and translation, which is not captured by doing that. And at least naively, we don't have anything to say about that. I have a conjecture I can make, but let me do it offline because it's pretty likely to be wrong.
But just to confirm, that classification you mentioned includes the same equivalence rules you picked, which choose a mirror plane, is that right? Your equivalence rules talk about attaching layers to a particular mirror plane?
Yeah, you can still, let me just make the simple statement that, you know, what you really do is you start with translation plus reflection, and then you focus on certain reflection subgroups. I mean, there is a version of those equivalence operations even if you have translation symmetry. You can still do something like that, respecting the translation.
Question is also about this E8. So after this dimensional reduction, it's natural to put 2D SPT phase, but this E8, although it's not SPT, it's also allowed. The condition, could you remind me, condition is absence of anions and also unique ground states?
Yeah, I think that's the general condition.
Uh-huh. And then E8 is the only possibility?
That's the only possibility that that we know of for bosons in two dimensions.
There is no proof yet.
I'm not aware of any proof. Maybe some people, I mean, what, okay, so I think that that's proven within the framework of abelian Chern-Simons theory, but I don't know of any, you know, but that's a particular framework, so I'm not aware of an argument more general than that it's the only possibility.
Is E8 state long-range entangled?
Well, that depends on your definition of long-range entangled, so it cannot be reduced to a product state by applying a local unitary, so it's long-range entangled by that definition. But it plus, you know, but it is invertible, so if you combine it with its conjugate state, then that state is short-range entangled. So, it, yeah, it's a kind of boundary case.
Asked. So the fact that you, in some sense, specifically do not allow translation, if one wanted to dream up a lattice model that would, you know, might be implementing one of those interacting classes, how would you kind of extinguish this translational symmetry? So you really only have one mirror plane, not on every side, but one plane. So it would be some inhomogeneous space that you would.
No, so you don't need to, you don't need to do that. So you should really think of this focusing on a single mirror plane as ignoring whatever translation symmetry is present, not actually breaking it explicitly. I mean,
right,
you could do that, but I think that's not very realistic.
Right. So you're saying that the ground state itself might spontaneously break translation. That's what you're saying.
Right. And another point to make is that, you know, we talk about, so these stack constructions are general, but there's no reason that these states have to look like stacks at a microscopic level. And in fact, for example, we know surface field theories for some of these states that have, you know, have no quasi-two-dimensional or quasi-one-dimensional character at all. So the statement is really that you can adiabatically connect these states to, you know, you can construct these states as stacks. That's the precise statement. It doesn't mean they have to be stacks at a microscopic level.
So I'd like to follow up on the E8. You said that under some assumption, this is the only thing that is known. So what are precisely the assumptions under which this is the unique thing?
Right. So I think it's I think that the E8 state is the only example we know of the following thing. So it's so let's say we have a bosonic system in two dimensions with no symmetry, but we want to consider invertible topological orders, so there are no anyons. So I think it's believed to be it's believed to be the only example of such.
So
a
what
thing.
About two copies of E8?
Well, okay, so I mean E8 plus integer copies of E8.
Okay, but then yeah. If you go to two copies, there is a six. SO16 level 1, which is a distinct theory from two copies of E8.
So
if you go with higher and higher multiples, the number of options grows very rapidly.
Right. So I think, you know, now, you know, this is definitely not something that people in the room have worked on this, so they can correct me if I say something wrong. So there are distinct edge conformal field theories that you can write down with the same chiral central charge, say, of 16. What I believe is shown, or at least, you know, I'm not sure under what generality this is shown, but my understanding is that it's shown that those are all of those edges have the same anomaly. They're all edges of the same bulk. So there's not
distinct.
Well, they're distinct as edge CFTs, but you can get from one to the other either by tuning some parameters and crossing a phase transition only on the edge, or by adding some trivial degrees of freedom just to the edge and then tuning parameters. So they're not distinct as two-dimensional, you know, two plus one-dimensional phases of matter. You should think of them as distinct edge phases of the same two plus one-dimensional phase of matter. So they're distinct in that sense, but I'm talking about equivalence classes of two plus one-dimensional gap states.
Mike, does this approach predict new insights in the case of the fermion system beyond what Liang's original theory had?
I think it may, yeah, maybe it does. So one thing I can tell you, which I think, you know, I would say, right. So okay, so one thing that this tells you is that if you take the n equals the TCI, the non-interacting electron TCI with four Dirac cones on the surface, so that's the one that's actually realized in lead tin telluride. If you take that and crank up interactions, you can actually completely gap out fermionic excitations on the surface, but you can leave sort of non-trivial physics in the spin sector of that model. So there's kind of a strongly correlated limit of that phase, which would have very different surface properties. So that's one thing you can say. I think that those properties are probably harder to probe than those of the Dirac theory, but that's, you know, that is a statement you can make.
You had some example where the connection to the relativistic classification was, you said, was very non-trivial. Can you Can you say what?
Oh, yeah, okay. So that's, yeah, so for any of these states, you can ask the following question. And I like to put it this way. So you start with this state and you ask, can you restore Lorentz invariance? So can you can you imagine adiabatically connecting this state that only has discrete spatial symmetries to some field theory that has the full Lorentz symmetry? And actually, I'll only talk about continuous rotational symmetry. It's enough to think about that. So the example is the following. So suppose that on, say, the vertical mirror plane, I put down a Z2 SPT state, and I put nothing on the horizontal mirror plane. Okay. So now, if we restored the continuous rotational symmetry in a naive way, we would say that's impossible because I can now continuously rotate the sigma 1 plane into the sigma 2 plane. And so if one of those planes hosts a Z2 SPT, so must the other one. Okay. However, it does not follow that there's not a Lorentz invariant field theory. And in fact, there is in that case. But you have to introduce an extra symmetry. So if you introduce an extra unitary Z2 symmetry, what you can do is break the rotation symmetry down to reflection on one plane, and then reflection times this unitary Z2 on the other plane. And that can lead to this arrangement, but starting from a Lorentz invariant field theory. But it's subtle, because if you were just starting from Lorentz invariant field theory, you might not have guessed that. And you could have arrived at a wrong answer if you're not careful about things like that.
Great. Well, if there are no further questions, I think since we're already a few minutes over, we'll break for lunch.